From health and wellness to education,
we need to be thinking about what it takes for students to succeed.
From art and politics to social issues of the day,
we have young Black males who are thriving in their communities and who are being shown as leaders.
The journey is what matters.
I would say to all of us, we can be better than we are.
Let's join Dr. Wayne A.I. Frederick, president of Howard University, and his guests as they take steps on the journey.
A man with a worldview who does more than raise questions of truth, justice, and the American way. He's the supervising attorney of the Civil Rights Clinic at Howard University. Hello, I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick, and our conversation today on the journey is with Professor Addison Francois. Welcome.
Thank you, Dr. Frederick. I'm glad to be here.
So you were born in Port-au-Prince, Haiti. Tell me about your upbringing before your journey to the United States.
That's right. I was born in Haiti, in Port-au-Prince. My parents met in the city. And I lived there for most of my early life, up until I was 18. My parents immigrated to this country before I came. In some ways, their journey was not that much different from a lot of other Caribbean immigrants. My father came to the U.S. when I was 4. My mother came to the U.S. when I was 5. And we remain in Haiti. I have 4 brothers and sisters. We were raised primarily in boarding houses and with other relatives. And then when I turned 17 or 18, I came and joined them here.
Now, what was life like in Haiti at that time in terms of your early education, how you passed your time, etc.?
It was a very interesting time. Part of the reason why my parents came to the U.S. is because they wanted to be able to afford to pay for education back home. Of course, even though I was very young and my sisters and brothers and I were very young, we still missed them terribly. I guess what made it better was that every summer they would bring us here for vacation. So I would spend the summer vacation with them here in the U.S. at the time they were living in Brooklyn, New York, and then we would go back to Haiti. In some ways, it was the best of both worlds. It was an opportunity to sort of immerse yourself in American culture and yet go back to the place where, to be quite honest with you, even though my parents were not there, it was still the place where we call home because we felt comfortable there.
You know, Brooklyn is a favorite place of mine. It's the first place in the U.S. I ever visited.
It's like the Haitian Mecca.
Absolutely.
It's either Miami or Brooklyn. That's where we go to when we come here.
Right. Now, tell me about your formal education in terms of undergrad and where you received your JD.
I received both my undergraduate degree and my JD degree at NYU. I went to NYU undergraduate in the College of Arts and Sciences, and then when I finished, I proceeded on to law school.
Now, at NYU law school, clearly you gravitated to the areas of interest you're involved in now, but that also launched you to a clerkship. Tell me about your clerkship.
Yes. When I finished law school, I clerked for a federal judge on the Third Circuit, who's unfortunately now deceased, is Elian Higginbotham Jr. He was a very well-known jurist while he lived. He essentially pioneered the entire field of studying race and the American legal system. He wrote a fairly significant book called In the Matter of Color, which was really the first significant legal text to explore the role that the law and the Constitution had in enforcing and maintaining and supporting the institution of slavery. I clerked with him for a year. Then he asked me to stay on for an additional year because, unbeknownst to me, he intended to retire from the bench. So in some sense, I was the one to turn out the lights, if you will, in his chambers. It was a tremendous experience. It was a very formative experience for me to watch this man who at some point was considered to be the potential successor for Justice Thurgood Marshall. Unfortunately, by the time Thurgood Marshall retired, the judge was a bit too advanced in age. Also, given his political views, President Bush the First was never going to appoint someone like Higginbotham on the bench. But his teaching, his discussions with me, my working with him, informed tremendously the rest of my career.
What are some of the guiding principles you think he gave you out of his teachings that today still represent the backbone of the structure that you're building in terms of your view of the law as it pertains to race, and then what you're also imparting on your students.
Well, there were several. The first, and I think for many people it may seem obvious, but for a long time it was well a revolutionary thing to say in the context of law. The first thing that he helped me understand was that it is impossible to understand the United States Constitution without understanding slavery. That slavery played such a formative role in not just the enactment of the Constitution, but its subsequent application, even though the word is never mentioned, that it is a mistake to speak of the Constitution without speaking of slavery. The second thing that I think he helped me sort of internalize, and I tried to pass on to my students, is this notion that the struggle for civil rights in this country is one that is ever continuing. The work is never done. It is never over. Not only that, but you can never be satisfied that you've reached a point that you can move on to something else. In some ways, what the country sometimes seems to go through is a constant period of reconstruction, where rights that are won sometimes are taken away, so you have to constantly fight back. And the last thing that he basically imparted to me was this notion that the reason why you fight for civil rights is not just because you're always going to win. Sometimes you lose more often than you win. But you have no choice but to fight, because that's one of the fundamental things that give your life meaning. And I try to live those principles, and I try to sort of work through them with my students, if you will.
You're listening to The Journey. My guest today is Professor Addison Francois from Howard University School of Law. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. Now, Professor Francois, when you look at what is occurring around us in society today, as you talk about that constant almost reliving the reconstruction, what is your view of the current reconstruction that must take place?
I think we're in a very challenging moment. I think we're in a difficult moment, but I think it's a moment that is also rife with opportunities. It feels almost as if we are in the midst of a new reconstruction. And I use the word very carefully to mean that in the wake of at the end of the Civil War, when African Americans had made a tremendous amount of progress in terms of political representation, economic progress, et cetera, but between, say, 1865 and 1880, at some point when Reconstruction ended, we basically saw nearly a century of moving backwards. That's it with Jim Crow, and it wouldn't end again until 1954 with Brown. I do not want to exaggerate to say that we're in a similar situation, but when one looks at the record of the court in general over the last 10 years and the way that many, many, many civil rights laws have been completely decimated, it feels sometimes as if that we are in a sort of neo-reconstruction moment. But to me, that's an opportunity. That's an opportunity for a place such as Howard, who played such a big role in bringing about the end of Jim Crow, to step back onto the stage and do what must be done.
Now, we live in a different period as you talk about Howard's role in that era. We live in a period where technology is leveraged differently.
Mm-hmm.
Information is transmitted as a result of that technology differently because of social media. And our students are coming to this day with a different background, a different experience. I often have said that my 10 and 8-year-old, my boy and girl, in 2016 may see a president who is Caucasian. And for them, it will be the first time they see a president who is Caucasian. So as a result, their worldview is different. How do we bring the lessons of the past to the contemporary experience?
I can appreciate that difficulty, and I think I have a similar challenge, or I experience a similar challenge with my students. Because sometimes it is hard to talk about these issues in an era where, as you said, the President of the United States is back, the Attorney General, the head of the National Security Administration, and any number of things that you can point to that prove the point that the world has changed. And I appreciate the fact that we have to basically use these new technologies to leverage the power that our students have. But what I sometimes tell my students is that I give the example of a man named Robert T. Walls, who was born a slave. His first owner was his father. His second owner was his brother. And he basically joined the Union Army during the Civil War, stole one of the biggest war boats that the South had, and delivered it to the North. And then at the end of the war, this man who had been born into slavery became a U.S. congressman in the House of Representatives and was responsible for one of the first major civil legislation to have ever been enacted. Now, I can appreciate the tremendous accomplishments that President Obama has done. And I don't think it's meant as a sign of disrespect or to take anything away from him to suggest that the distance that President Obama traveled from the halls of Harvard to the White House is actually not quite as vast as that was traveled by Robert Walls from slavery to the House of Representatives. So sometimes we have the tendency of thinking that things are new, that the progress that we've made today are the most that we've ever done. I mean, it's actually not quite true. And I think that's a tremendous lesson to be learned from the expense of the past.
Now, you run the Civil Rights Clinic mm-hmm. at Howard University. Tell me a little bit about the types of cases and the types of activity that center is currently involved in.
The cases that we do are informed by the history of the university in general and the law school in particular. In many ways, I tell my students two things. Number one, if you think of clinical education, in ways that the school doesn't get credit for, the law school invented the idea of impact clinical legal education, because when Charles Hamilton Houston began to challenge Jim Crow, many of these efforts began at the law school before he took them to LDF. And at the time that he was doing this work with students, it was unheard of in legal education. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that I tell students who first come to the law school that for better or for worse, whatever difficulty you may have with Brown people of education, we made the U.S. And by extension, we made the world. The world we live in today was made by Brown. And Howard made Brown. So when I think of those two ideas, what I try to do with my students is we say there's a continuing conversation that goes in the country about civil rights. We have to be at the table when that occurs. So as such, we tend to take on cases having to do with education, voting rights, marriage equality, employment discrimination. And what we look to do is not just to serve the community, but to also take on these cases that we think are going to have a significant impact. When you look at law schools around the country, law schools are always struggling to define for themselves and for their students what they think of as their mission. And every one of these law schools, their mission sounds remarkably similar. They always talk about, you know, training lawyers to do what's right, training lawyers to pursue justice, et cetera, et cetera. But then when you look at these schools, you always ask yourself, okay, but what evidence do you have in your DNA that ties to your mission? And I think Howard doesn't have to look very far. When we say that we exist to pursue justice and equality, not just for African Americans, for any group that has been and continues to be persecuted or to be afforded less than a full measure of equality, we can point to our history, recent history, and continuing work. I'm quite serious when I say that this country where you live today was made by this school. There's a lot of work that remains to be done. So if you want to be part of continuing to remake that country, come here and we'll remake it together.
Thanks for being here. My guest today has been Professor Addison Francois. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. Please join me next time on The Journey.
You've been listening to The Journey with Dr. Wayne A.I. Frederick, right here on the Howard University Radio Network.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR World on HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, glasshouseradio.com, HUR Voices Sirius XM 141, HBCU Sirius XM 142, and 96.3 WHUR Washington.